So I'm drinking something new. It's sour berry lemon vodka, which is the exact color of Romulan ale.
That's cool.
Uh-huh. And it has enough flavor to it that you can actually drink it straight instead of having to mix it.
Uh-huh. Well, they've mixed it for you, obviously.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah. How is it?
For the lush on the go. Well, you don't have time to mix your own drink. It comes in a camel pack. So you just strap it on and put the straw in your mouth, and you're good to go all day.
It comes in a hat.
So do I, which is why I'm not allowed to run the coat closet anymore.
I saw that one coming so far away.
Well, Mickey, maybe you should stand downwind instead.
Podcasts, the final frontier. These are the audio logs of the podcast Superhero Time. Their 5-month mission? Explore old episodes of Star Trek, alienate even more listeners, and boldly plow your mom where no one has come before.
Superhero Time presents that one episode of Star Trek. With Chris.
I hope at some point in the future, if I'm declared too ugly to exist, I get a nice box to travel around into.
Hey, Mickey.
The F stands for fuck.
Ken.
I've run out of plugs.
Scott.
Speaking of that, have you ever had a mule?
And Fort Max.
Okay, it's back in.
All right, who's running this clown show?
But we're not quite there yet. So this week on that one episode of Star Trek, it's Assignment Earth, the Roddenberry spinoff Major Barrett didn't try to revive in the 90s.
You mean it's Assignment Earth?
Wait, this is an assignment? Should I have been taking notes? Is there going to be a test?
There
You're
will be.
You're being tested right now.
Oh, that's absolutely true. You old people testing my patience.
So we have bad news. Ken was killed off screen by a malevolent life form and will no longer be on the show with us here.
It was a senseless death.
It was a completely failed away mission.
There were rape gangs.
Right, but anyway, so yeah, Assignment Earth was it was the end of season 2 of the original series, and since
could have been the last episode of the original series.
Yeah, since the show was looming on the brink of cancellation already at that point. Roddenberry apparently decided, hey, let's try to start something up new so we still have work next year.
So he's clawing and scraping at his time on television, trying to stay on as long as he can in any capacity. He saw the writing on the wall and was like, I have to come up with something so I can stay on TV.
Yes.
I see.
So he can stay on TV and still use like 50% of Star Trek's, you know, prop assets.
What I'm learning is that Star Trek doesn't handle a season 2 finale very well.
Well, no, because if you think about Next Generation, that was a clip show.
Yeah,
like,
that's
the only
kind of
clip
what
show,
I...
no, the second clip show Star Trek ever did out of 2.
And strangely, the only Star Trek episode that had a laugh track. It was very weird.
Huh. You know, if you add a laugh track over this at key points, it actually might improve it.
It would. I think it would.
Hmm. Maybe cut in some shots of Lucille Ball.
Yeah, because this is like before Mary Tyler Moore, so I don't think that would work.
Yeah.
Maybe have like Captain Kirk walking on the bridge, trip over an ottoman.
Well, and it's not like she would be that hard to get on. She owned the place.
This is true.
Yeah, yeah. This was her story. This was Desi Lu.
So now that I'm thinking about it more, maybe, you know, get like... Henry Winkler instead.
Yeah, because he kind of makes everything better.
Yeah, yeah.
But no. I mean, having Kirk and the Fonz in the same space-time continuum, wouldn't that, like, cause something bad to happen? There's just too much cool. I mean, that would make the sun go out or something. I mean, it's like
I'm kind of imagining, like, you know, there's a problem with the phasers won't fire.
Yeah, I can hear Scotty now. Oh, I hate that prick, but he's so good at what he does, you know. I don't know how he does it, but I'm glad he does it.
Yeah, he didn't. You know, the Fonz fixes it the way he fixes every machine.
And how's that?
By having sex with it.
Yeah,
I think Scotty would probably get jealous.
Well, the thing is, like, the Fonz wouldn't have just one job on the ship. He would have all the jobs on the ship. Also, he would have, you know, Picard's smoking jacket?
He would His crushed velvet jacket?
He would have that, but it would be, you know, an actual leather jacket. And...
Oh, shit, I know what he would do. He'd be Guinan for the original series.
Oh my god, yes.
With the hats?
Yeah.
Can we have him keep his eyebrows, for God's sakes?
Yes. People without eyebrows are unsettling and wrong.
Except for Whoopi Goldberg, who somehow pulls it off.
I think it's the hat.
Yeah, it must be.
The hat takes the place of eyebrows.
Because, yeah, when you're that cool, you don't really need to express, you know, to be able to express facial emotions. So you just, just a hat.
I mean,
just
it's counterintuitive for an acting role that you wouldn't need to, like, you know, express emotions or have facial expressions in general. And but yet.
But if you're supposed to just have that all-knowing, wise, very placid look on your face all the time, getting rid of the eyebrows is a good way to do it.
And slightly bemused by the inferior beings around you.
Right. Basically, your whole character is that you know so much that everything else is stupid and boring to you. It's perfect.
Right. So, hey, Mickey, have you shaved your eyebrows recently?
Not recently.
Okay.
Oh, so you got the unibrow going again, I guess?
It's more of a vertical brow.
What are you, a Packlid?
My eyebrows make me go.
Not nearly far enough away or quick enough. Oh, man.
Well, I mean, you got most of a country between the two of you. I would think that would be a start.
Yeah, that's true. There's a lot of flyover states between me and Hey Mickey right now, which is unfortunate.
I mean, there's even like a mountain range trying to keep you apart.
Yeah, but with Hey Mickey, it could be like a city block, and he'd be like, eh, too much effort.
Yeah, basically.
Right, I had to, like, go outside. Yeah.
Which is funny, since it was his idea to come to Nashville later this month and hang out.
Well, I wanted sushi.
Well, yeah, and the new comic book store location.
Yes, there's no greater city in the world for sushi than Nashville, Tennessee.
Fortunately, the sushi place and the comic book store are 20 minutes apart, so that'll be really convenient.
Good.
It's not terribly convenient.
It's more convenient than the difference between Charlotte Pike and Hermitage.
Well, true.
Yeah. As we talk about things nobody else has any context for.
Oh, yeah. Hen jokes! They're so funny, right?
It's not even jokes, it's just
Yeah. I'm sure XV's mom is going to be on Google Maps right now. Like, what the hell are they talking
Max,
about?
What's the way should we take to get to each other? Should we take the toll road or?
I'm so glad Tennessee doesn't actually have tollways.
I'm glad we have really shitty roads that are all gravelly and bumpy.
I want Fort Max to voice my Tom Tom. I want him to voice. I want Fort Max to do the GPS voice.
It'll give you the directions to go someplace that you're not wanting to go.
Oh, I thought you were going to say it was going to give you directions to go fuck yourself.
That is what Fort Max said, basically.
That is true. That is true. Yeah. Loud and clear, Fort Max.
Well, and the other thing is, too, it would just... Well, it's a GPS, so it would do it anyway. It would just, you know, start talking over you in the middle of a conversation you're having.
I still want the Kamen Rider Decade GPS.
What, just in that voice, you mean?
Yes.
What would that sound like?
Well, let's see if we can find some driver noises for you.
I prefer one like in sounds? The Fize Gear voice.
I mean, that is like a smoother voice. It's kind of relaxing. At the same time, though, like... The Deca driver would be more enthusiastic about you getting to your location.
Imagine a game show voice telling you to turn left and stuttering at the same time.
So, turn left!
That's pretty close, actually, yes.
So, did before Majel Barrett died, rest in peace, did she do like a GPS voice? Because I want Elkars to be my GPS voice. That'd be awesome.
What year did she die?
Oh no, let's see. When did I go in for questioning? When was that? It's like she passed away in 2008. So yeah, we had computers in 2008. That's possible.
It's possible. I don't remember ever hearing about it.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's something you'd hear about.
Are you sure? That seems like that would just be all over the place.
Yeah, I think so. I don't know. Maybe people get to get distracted by like Stewie Griffin doing the voice and forget about Majel Barrett. I don't know.
On the other hand, you can have Darth Vader read your directions to you. So.
Yeah, but it's like writing with like your best friend who has asthma, so it's a little confusing.
How do Tom Toms even still exist? I mean,
I don't know. I pulled that one out of the archives. I have no idea. I'm frankly surprised no one called me on it when I said it.
Well,
I actually got an email at work the other day from Tom Tom saying, "Have you updated your device recently?" And we're like, "No, with no reason to. It hasn't been charged in years."
Well, it was a very, yeah, that's the most sad, hopeful, pathetic email ever. Like, there's one automated system still running on their servers. It's like reaching out for any sign of connection. Oh, God.
Actually, Tom Tom's going to send some giant probe back to Earth that's going to start destroying everything in its path.
Now, wait, is that going to be the Whale Pro or V'ger?
Yes.
Well, it doesn't matter because it's going to get halfway here, between like here and Alpha Proxima Centauri, and then the roads have changed since then. It's going to get lost and end up.
It's going to find its way on the equivalent of a flooded out gravel road.
Right. It's going to drive itself into the Pacific Ocean.
No, it's going to look for Pluto and go, "What the fuck? It's not a planet anymore." And it's going to get confused. It's not going to make it here.
But actually, no, what will happen is it's going to start off its journey going past Romulus, and well, you know.
Yeah, we have some bad news. Are you sitting down?
Nobody's updated TomTom for the gravitational differences based on the black hole.
Right. See, they did it right with the Nexus. You know, they actually plotted that out. That was smart. But no, I don't think TomTom's got that same astrometrical capability.
Well, Tom Tom isn't Malcolm McDowell.
Nobody is Malcolm McDowell.
Did he ever do a GPS voice?
My God, that would be awesome.
If you paid him $30, he probably would. Have you seen what roles he's taken? He's not picking.
Yeah. No, he's not. No, he's not. Well, $30 and a bottle of Hennessy. I think that would probably do it.
The best, though, would have been Tim Curry.
Yes.
It should be a visual GPS, though. Just him just leering at you.
Smirking and licking his lips.
Instead of telling you to turn left, he sort of like leers left.
Those big, sad, doughy eyes he has.
A knowing wink.
Yeah.
You know,
just kind of gestures with one fishnetted leg. Oh. Mm.
I kind of like the concept, though, of a video GPS with, you know, an actor.
Okay, so imagine this. Imagine going on the 405 in L.A. with the Chris Farley GPS. We gotta go over here! Gesturing wildly, and your car flips over in midair.
And then the opposite of that, the Bob Ross GPS.
You drift off to sleep while you're driving.
Yeah. Hope you're driving a Tesla, bitch, or you're going to die.
What about having the hologram of Robin Williams tell you how to drive?
Oh, okay. Oh, go here. We'll do this. Oh.
It gives you like one step of directions and goes off topic.
Yeah, you're going to end up in Nebraska, you know?
So basically, it's the GPS version of this podcast.
Yes.
Yeah, I think so.
Right, so anyway.
So welcome to the GPS podcast. I'm Scott. We have XB, Hey Mickey, and Fort Max.
So anyway, assignment Earth, Scott.
Yo.
Go for it.
Oh, you bastard. All right, yep. I'll do it. That's what I get for being the FNG. I got to do all the crap work around here.
Yeah.
That's right, Wesley. Get to it.
Ooh, low blow.
All right, so we're running. We have, again, this is the remastered version, so it's very nice. The special effects are beautiful. Oh, look, it's actually Earth, and it's actually the moon, and it's actually a gorgeous-looking Constitution-class Enterprise.
And hey, there's actually clouds over the planet this time.
Yeah, yeah, it's not this weird, blurry thing.
It's
like,
not the old... It's not the old Universal logo prop.
See, I always took that to mean that in the future they had perfected weather, so it was just perfectly sunny and 72 degrees all over the world all the time.
But still, this episode is set in 1968.
Yeah, so
for reasons.
They just quickly in the narration, they just say, "Oh, by the way, we decided to travel back in time to 1968 to kind of just look around. So that's what we're doing. We can just time travel whenever the fuck we want. Moving on."
Well, they can. I mean,
wait, no, this is important. Nope, too late. We're just here. Let's move on with the episode.
Well, no, it's because you missed the first season episodes where they actually did that.
Yeah, I mean, I know it's a thing, but still, it's just
Star Trek 4.
Way too blasé about it.
Also, Star Trek 4, which happened 30 years later,
using the same principle, though.
Right.
I like how there's really no excuse for them to be back here. It's like, we're here to watch 1968 happen.
Yeah. Well,
to see what happened.
Already.
As if we don't have records of it.
Yeah.
Well, I think the thing is Kirk is like, I must know where the miniskirt came from. I can't sleep at night. It consumes my very being.
Kirk saw some hot bitch in the historical records and said, I've got to go back in time and tap that ass.
And let's just hope it wasn't like...
I need to get my hands in that beehive.
And then through some convoluted means of, ancestry, Kirk ends up being Spock's great-great-great-grandfather.
Oh, my God.
So when they bang, it's kind of incestuous.
Yeah. So they... Were they about to beam down, or what was happening? Like, suddenly they get a teleport signal.
They were trying to watch Bonanza, and then somebody came and rang the doorbell.
Right. Little did they know that Bonanza would still be in syndication in the 23rd century. They could have just tuned into TBS, you know, Proxima Centauri, and it would have been fine.
They wouldn't even have to do that. They could just,
put it on the
holodeck.
It'd
be in public domain by then.
No. Here's what they would do. They would just fly 200 light years away and then read
to where
the
it was still being filmed.
Relativity, bitches.
That's also how they've recovered all the lost TV episodes.
Yeah. Now, can you imagine those?
Doctor Who.
Yeah.
The Enterprise is sitting there, and it's like Netflix. Like, wait, I missed that conversation. Go back. So they go warp 0.5 for like 2 minutes to go backwards to read the signals so they can watch the scene again. FaceTime is just Netflix. So the transporter picks up something, and it picks up what appears to be a caveman Neanderthal with a cat. That's weird. Look at that growl.
Suddenly beamed onto the Enterprise.
Yeah.
Oh, come on. It's Robert Lansing. He's great.
He is.
Yeah, the transporter room is still very purple.
Oh, also, it was on fire for a minute there.
Yeah, the purple. That's a purple ass room. Damn it, Fort Max. Now that's all I can see.
The purple light wavelengths help reinforce the transporter strength.
Well,
either it was that or it just means the room is magic.
It's royalty. And one thing I noticed about this episode is that poor cat is not happy to be here. That is the worst trained cat ever.
So it's a cat.
Yes.
Yeah, it's pretty much an average cat. Okay, so yes, this guy in a suit knows, oh, you're a Vulcan and you're this, and why did you do this to me? I got to get down to Earth. And then Spock, they do the greatest sting take of Spock I've seen in this episode, in this series up to this point. It's like, dun, dun, dun. He shifts his head, he raises his eyebrow, then leans his head back, and it's like the best take ever.
You're a
Spock's Vulcan. Blown away.
Yeah, he's like, what?
What the shit?
Okay, so Gary Seven speaking very seriously to Kirk, going, you've really screwed up. Why did you do this? What kind of idiot monkeys are you? I swear, how are you not flinging your feces around, you idiots?
And I like what Kirk's response is like, what's going on?
Yeah, he's got to get kind of the, dude, what?
What? And Gary's like, look, I'm on a secret mission here. I'm here to save Earth. And Kirk's like, yeah, we're going to need some proof on that. We've been burned before.
Yeah. You're going to leave us with a Psi 2000 virus and then just leave. Although I was kind of interested in Kirk's skepticism of all this. And he actually seems very concerned about, okay, what the hell is actually going on? He really doesn't want anything bad to happen. He's not nearly as cowboyish as he normally is.
Well, yeah, but the last time they traveled back to the 20th century, unintentionally, they ended up with like half a dozen passengers that they had to get rid of through various, you know, improbable accidents.
Are you sure that wasn't Willy Wonka?
You know, 6 to 1.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, you have all these people and you slowly get rid of them one by one in all these improbable ways.
He didn't want another Edith Keeler situation.
Nah. So the dude is immune to Vulcan nerve pinches, but not phasers, so that's good.
Yeah, Kirk shoots the shit out of him.
Yeah.
Now, look, if you had a weapon that you know you could shoot somebody with over and over again and not kill them, you totally would.
Oh, I'd be doing
especially
it right now.
Especially if it was Geordi.
Well, yeah, I wouldn't be talking to you. I'd be doing it right now. So they're trying to figure out what's going on.
Set phaser to stimulate.
Oh, my. Yeah.
Set phasers to Hitachi magic wand.
So, okay,
you have
now,
to
I
know
the,
that
after
there's
this.
All sorts of porn that involves shooting people with phasers.
It's the 24th century version of Vore.
Oh, God. No, I'm sure that would involve...
I'm pretty sure the 24th century version of Vore would be Vorine. There's probably aliens that can do that.
Yes. I was thinking like the Doomsday device. You know, it's just swallowing whole planets. It's all like slow and sensual.
Well, it looks like a fleshlight, too, so...
It looks like a colon. That's not really the most sensual of organs.
Isn't it, though? Isn't it? No? All right.
It's no uvula.
This is the worst episode we've recorded yet.
Probably. Probably wait till next week. So I love that as soon as they get Gary Seven locked away in leg irons or whatever, Spock immediately just picks up his cat and just starts stroking the shit of it. Mm, nice cat.
He is stroking that black
well,
pussy.
It's a cat.
Yes.
It's only logical that I stroke this pussy.
I'm going to stroke the shit out of this black diamond encrusted pussy. Now the cat seems to like Spock. And I would imagine that cats like Vulcans.
Yeah, Kitty's doing a little curled paw thing. He's
making biscuits. That's what we call it, making biscuits. Yeah, look at that kitty making biscuits.
So then Kirk briefs the entire crew.
Because we need to show that McCoy is in this episode for some seconds of the episode.
Yeah. Yes.
10 words.
So I like like this. This is one of my favorite parts, is that Gary Seven, down in the brig, he goes, oh, force field, crap. So he pulls out his sonic fucking screwdriver.
I know, right?
Yeah. And there's Lieutenant Beefcake. Look at this guy. He is a mongoloid. The security guy that got down there looks like a surfer dude with Down syndrome.
I like, too, that the security guy is basically, you know, eyeing Gary Seven the whole time like, oh, I could beat the shit out of that guy.
Oh, yeah. He's like,
Gary Seven uses his sonic screwdriver to give him an orgasm.
Yeah.
And the other thing, too, is that, okay, you got someone who, you know, took five people to get control of in the transporter room. Why aren't you searching him while he's stunned and taking all of his toys away?
That's the thing that when I saw this, when I was watching him, they didn't even search him. They just put him in there just with whatever.
Uh-huh.
Well, they wouldn't have much of a plot if they did.
This is true, but still.
Well, it just appeared to be a regular ink pen.
Actually, no, they could still have had... No, Fort Max, they still could have had a plot that just would have required the cat to go let him out.
Or, you know, writing. I like the fact that Spock basically tosses the cat at the door. The cat's like, I'm out of here, and leaves. You know, I don't want a cat in my car when I'm driving it. I can't imagine a cat running around willy-nilly in a starship. Stepping on, like, buttons and controls. What the hell? Really? You just let the cat run?
It's nice that the doors aren't, like, specific enough to not respond to a cat also.
Yeah.
Just, you know, it's very low-tech doors. They just respond to whatever emotions in front of them.
Well, the Enterprise is species tolerant.
That's true. There is the few, like, you know, sentient house cats that are running around running their, I don't know.
What if a Tholian showed up on the ship? You know, they want the doors to open for them.
Well, I mean, a Tholian's probably taller than a cat.
Yeah, and Tholians, if they were, they either die of freezing to death or they would melt everything in their immediate vicinity.
Yeah, it's hard to say, really.
Because they live at, like, 1,300 Celsius.
But that's, like, what, 74 degrees Fahrenheit?
Yeah, I think so. The conversion is a little weird on that, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's tepid. So, yeah, so he gets out. So Gary Seven gets out of his TARDIS vault.
Yeah, he uses the Enterprise's transporter to teleport into a safe filled with poo gas.
Wait. Mickey.
Yes.
Your poo gas is blue?
Yours isn't?
Yeah, that's weird. Yours really should be blue. If it's not, you need to go to the Dr. XV.
I thought it was usually green or brown.
Well, it depends on yellowish. How much fiber and alcohol you have in your system. I typically have a lot of both.
Yeah, especially if it's blue fucking vodka.
I'll tell you what, I've been drinking a lot of that berry lime Mountain Dew Game Fuel.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God.
That definitely has an impact on things.
You should drink that with a Halloween Whopper.
I was thinking about that, like what that combination of things would do. I'm pretty sure I would die.
It would leave blue stains in the porcelain. You'd have to paint over them.
Yeah, it would start looking like fine china. Especially when you flush, get a nice swirl pattern going on. What's this, from a Han Dynasty? Nope.
A Ming toilet.
So, I can't believe we're not focusing on this riveting episode. So Gary Seven, he gets down to his office. This massive wall swings open with this massive computer with this really snotty female voice.
You know, all the changes.
Sassy.
All the changes they made to that office, they're never getting their security deposit back.
No. So he talks to his computer, and the computer seems pretty intelligent, but just, like, gives him crap about who are you and what are you doing here. And then he seems to out-logic the computer and trick it into giving him access.
Well, how else is he? Well, and of course the computer's going to ask him to state his name and mission. What are they going to do? Like, have a narrator give exposition?
Ooh, wow.
I mean, that's a good point.
Yeah.
But even if the computer asks, the computer's like, okay, well, no.
Oh, yeah.
And then they get into the whole duck season, rabbit season routine.
Yeah.
Duck season, rabbit scene?
Rabbit scenes and seasonings. Ooh, rabbit seasonings.
Those aren't milk duds, dude. Don't eat those.
Pellets in, pellets out.
Yeah, like a giant space hamster.
Not with the milk duds.
No, you don't. They're candy on the outside, poison on the inside.
It's just caramel.
Just like you, hey, Mickey.
I'm more like a raisin.
Old and wrinkled?
Yeah. Yes.
And full of eight. And if it would have been lucky, it would have been wine. So Gary Seven, in the course of time...
I think Ben's more the wine in that relationship.
Oh, God. He doesn't listen to
Ken could be part of the wine, too. I don't like watching terrible episodes of things. I quit.
Yes, and yet he still sings the praises now of Kamen Rider Drive.
Yes, well, there's no accounting for taste.
Especially when you don't have any.
We love you, Ken. But since you're not here, we get to make fun of you, and you can't stop us.
It's amazing how fast we turn on someone as soon as they leave the show.
He turned his backs on us first. There's an ample spot for a knife right there. I mean...
Let me just get my grape gun.
He's talking about this episode.
Let me get my grape gun.
All right, so I like Gary Seven. He's talking to his computer and decides, like, Mr. Rogers, he needs to change clothes. So in one scene, he's in a totally new suit for some reason.
Well, you know, his other one got roughed up when he was on the ship. That won't do.
I guess so. So we see, you know, the 1960s, late 60s, I assume New York. and then we see a Mary Tyler Moore stereotype running down the street, some blonde chick.
In the most hideous dress I have ever seen in anything from the 60s.
Yeah, it's like if you take the lemon and strawberry starbursts and put them in a blender and then put them on a ditzy blonde.
Or you know those eye tests to see if you're colorblind?
Yeah, I took some of those today.
Oh, yeah, it looks like he's wearing one of those.
Yes.
Oh, that test I had to take today, the colorblindness test, it was number, number, number. And then she would pause and she looked at me and I said, there's no number here. She said, okay, good. So they actually threw a curveball in there to see if you were lying about seeing numbers. Trixie, Trixie.
I see no number, but I see your future.
Oh, God. So as the scene changes where she runs up thinking that she's going to be the secretary for this office with apparently no idea what she's doing. The film
quality
changes.
She's been the secretary.
But she still has no idea what she's doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's trying to figure out who this guy is. And this poor girl, again, I guess it was just because of the 60s, she is the most sexist character.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I mean, wow.
To be fair, anyone that would choose to wear this outfit probably isn't very bright.
Oh, no. She's plenty bright. She's so bright I can barely look at her. I can't even hear her. Her clothes are so loud.
Also, the purse she's carrying.
Yeah, it looks like she transformed into Soundwave.
So...
No, it's not nearly that elegant.
It looks like a tissue box. It looks like a tissue box cozy is what it looks like.
Yeah, kind of. With big wooden rings on it.
So when you want to hear a bunch of Star Trek nerds critiquing fashion of the late 60s, this is your podcast, people.
Scott, have you ever seen the Fashion It So blog?
No, I don't think so.
Let's take a break to do that right now.
All right. Pausing the episode. We'll be back in a few hours.
Might as well see if they've updated lately, yeah.
Gary Seven somehow manages to restrain himself from slapping this hysterical 60s woman. But he does roofie her with his magic pen.
Well, no, he just locks her in the office.
No, he just locks her in. That's right. I thought he was going to give her the happy juice. But no, so now he's kidnapping her. Keeping her against her will.
Mm-hmm. And then he just, you know, misleads her into thinking that she's going to be serving her country if she stays.
Right, right. And now they're talking to the Green Cube.
Because, you know, in the 60s, all 20-year-old blonde girls were super patriotic.
Oh, well, yeah. Look what was just posted.
Hmm?
Look what was just posted on the Fashionette Soap blog.
Well, well, well. So, yeah, the Fashionette Soap has a still from the episode we're currently watching. Look at that.
Making fun of Spock's toboggan.
Yeah. It fast forward about 20 years, he was just like a stoner.
I was in an episode of Star Trek where you have to go back in time and infiltrate Nirvana right before they made it big.
Kurt Cobain just had like a mental parasite, and that's what, you know, why he blew his brains out.
Kurt Cobain.
But yeah, so Fashionette So is a blog that basically picks apart episodes of Next Generation almost exclusively, if not exclusively, for the, you know, non-uniform wardrobe. It's actually quite an interesting perspective to take on episodes.
Yeah, well, if I get interested in fashion, I'll let you know.
I don't care about fashion either, but it's funny.
It is. It's like people of Walmart. Can't look away.
So they've got this typewriter that you talk into it and it types for you.
Yes.
Which is incredibly inconvenient.
Yeah, because it says it types out whatever it hears, not what you're saying to it. So it just has to be completely silent in the room except for you talking and dictating exactly.
The other thing is...
it's like the most literal stenographer in the world working for you.
Right. The other thing is, if you're a good typist, you can type faster than you can talk.
That is very true.
So this is actually... No. She may not be, but just, like, in general practice. Like, if you consider the agents that she works for, who, by the dialogue of the episode, have been bred and trained for generations to be, like, the peak of humanity... Obviously, they would be the best typist in the world, just like Batman.
Because that is one of Batman's primary powers.
Well, Batman's good at everything. That is his power.
Right, including typist. I mean, he could be the world's greatest secretary, but instead he chooses to be a detective.
Should we really be encouraging the spread of that in-joke, considering its origin?
I don't know what you're talking about.
But Batman is good at everything. That's the problem.
Yes, well.
So Kirk and Spock come down. They're all dressed in their civvies. Kirk looks like a flasher, to be perfectly honest.
Looks like.
Now, I see a tie. So I don't know if that's just like the top part of a tie.
The top of his dick.
Oh, my God. He ties it in a knot.
Ow.
Wow. He can tie his dick into a Windsor. Very impressive. So Gary Seven knows these guys are coming in. He's like, fuck this, I'm out. And he goes to his vault and starts to TARDIS away.
No, I like pack that down from there.
And your cat or TV cat?
My cat.
Okay. What's your cat doing?
Headbutting a cup of water.
That's a bad idea.
That sounds naughty.
I think you should just let cat be and let cat learn its own lesson when it spills water all over itself.
That has happened before and it didn't help.
Oh. Never mind.
So I like that Gary Seven here, ostensibly our heroic lead for the new show. When the Enterprise comes for him, what he does is he runs away and hides.
Yes, he leaves the poor secretary to be manhandled by these strangers that could mean her harm. And they do manhandle her. She calls the cops and they physically wrench her away from the phone and, like, grapple her.
Well, she was clearly hysterical.
Yeah, yes. It was the 60s. This kind of thing was more permissible.
Oh, my God. So Gary Seven walks out of a portal in the middle of some sort of NASA facility that everyone can see him just walk out of this blue swirling fart cloud and no one says anything.
I like the mechanism, though, that this implies where, you know, you go through that thing and it makes a portal in a doorway somewhere.
Right, just somewhere. And then we begin the long slog.
The funny thing is that's actually what the original plan for the TARDIS was.
That it would just, like, open out on a door somewhere.
Yeah.
But they, but it meant that they'd probably have to be making a lot more props than just using that one over and over.
Ah.
Yeah. So he steps out into some NASA facility and then begins the long slog of stock footage that we will see a million fucking times.
And they are so proud of Saturn V. And that one still frame.
Yeah, yeah. It's one frame.
It's one frame. They keep going on it. It has this big black splotch at the center. Yeah. Wasn't there another one that they could pick?
No.
Or was that the best one?
No, this is like 68 or 69. This is the Saturn V. I think this is around the time we went to the moon or probably right before. And this was like high-tech, top-secret stuff. So, I mean, that was like a promotional image that NASA and the government set out. And that's the only one they could have. This is the height of the Cold War.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that wasn't a promotion. It's just that thing just looks like a still frame from a film.
Oh, you're right. I think you're absolutely right. But they show it over and over again.
Right, and they picked what seems to have been the worst frame to pick. Now,
it probably wasn't as obvious
when they went to the archive footage when it aired.
Oh, man.
But still, you can tell it's probably not sourced. It's something not shot on 35mm.
No, this
is 8mm.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This is 8mm.
Yeah, it's from somebody's, like, family vacation. Like, Gene Roddenberry's family vacation. He just took it from his 8mm little crank camera.
Gene Roddenberry's family vacation on a helicopter around the launch site.
Yeah, in Cape Canaveral.
Uh-huh.
So I like how the cops come running in, and they look the most stereotypical Irish cops. Oh, Faith Magara, what are you doing here today? You know, they're just...
I like their little dress uniforms they have.
Yeah, like Nazis in a rainstorm.
Well, felt Nazis.
Nittler.
That's the villain for the third season of Danger 5.
I was going to say, it sounds like a character you get in trouble for making in, like, oh, God, what was that game? Shoot. The one on the PlayStation, the Sackboy and all that.
Oh, Little Big Planet?
Yeah, Little Big Planet. It's like you get in trouble, you get banned from Little Big Planet from making Nittler.
Nittler?
Also, Little Sackboy just sounds wrong.
Oh, you prefer Big Sack Boy? Yeah, it's up to you.
It's not the size of your sack. It's what you can empty out of it.
It's how much you can carry, right? So I don't even know what's going on anymore. Gary Seven's here. He's going to try to stop the rocket. He gives some security guard an orgasm with a pin. Can't believe they show that on television. And then there's like a guy who's like a middle manager in a biggest like T-Bird or something. He has to drive to the rocket. And I don't know. Does anybody
this
know?
This episode wasn't good in the first half. But the second half becomes an exercise in tedium.
This is so tedious. I had to make myself watch this. I had to make myself watch it.
I actually sat through it twice because the first time I fell asleep in it.
Oh. So... we get back to the Enterprise, and Scotty is using his magic evil cam to look at different angles all at the same time of the Saturn V rocket from different angles, clearly on a helicopter, but he can dial into it and change wherever he wants.
I would say the motion of the footage is excusable just because the Enterprise is moving, the Earth is rotating. The perspective's going to change a little bit.
Which would be fine if it kept in one perspective, but they keep changing from different angles at different times of the day.
I get what you're saying, and, like, I can excuse parts of it, but, yeah, it's certainly not the best effort.
No. It's like it doesn't even make sense. You know, it's like, oh, well, you can't say, oh, well, that's clearly just so high tech they can do that. No, that doesn't even make sense. So more rocket shots, and then the NASA, you know, voiceover. You know.
Which is actually James Doohan, I think.
Probably, because he did almost all the voices, right?
He did a lot of voiceover, like, you know, generic voiceover work for the series.
Yeah. So they'll get the two guys from get the guy from falling down. Anybody remember that Kurt Douglas movie?
Yes.
Yeah.
So they got him and then his two sea captain buddies. And they're checking out the rocket. That's not a euphemism. Then Gary Seven just comes popping out of the trunk.
Is that a metaphor?
No.
Well,
no.
Security wasn't, you know, what it. Security back then wasn't what it is now.
No, because if it was this easy, the Russians would have like destroyed us.
So Gary Seven look like good humor ice cream men to me.
Yeah, they got that kind of ice cream man kind of look about them.
Just drop a paper hat on them.
Right.
Also have them giving me an ice cream cone.
So we see these guys and they're just standing there. They're literally just standing there looking at stock footage of a gantry going up. And that's it. I mean, it's just, then they get back in their cars and then leave. And apparently someone has to do maintenance on his car, so they're leaking like motherfuckers. They drive away, there's this huge puddle of fluids underneath them. The 60s. Oil is 15 cents a gallon.
Yeah, they just had huge holes in the gas tanks. That wasn't a big deal.
Yeah. Just, you know, you start for gas and you put a quart of oil in. That's just what you do. So Gary Sevens, I like how Gary Sevens riding the elevator up to the rocket and he starts undoing his tie like he's going to get naked on the way up.
It'd be great if he was wearing a different suit when he got to the top again.
That's how genetically perfect he is. He just exudes another suit. He sheds it. He molts it like a spider.
Molt suits?
Because Kurt goes and runs, you know, at the bottom of the gantry. He's like, my God, there's a, you know, fine linen suit here. He's nearby. It's like split down the back where he crawled out of it backwards, wiggling his appendages.
He's genetically bred to be able to tell when fashions change. Like he can hear on the wind. No longer stylish.
The late 80s and early 90s were a weird time for him.
Oh, shit. So I like how Kirk and Spock, they transport in, and apparently there's no way to scan the air to see where you're landing. And there's a security guard right there. They transport right in front of this poor guy. So he pulls out this little .38 service revolver.
Oh, and we skipped the part two in the office where they accidentally beam up two police officers.
Yes.
Quick, send them back. Send them back.
Yeah.
Remember what happened last time?
Oh, that's right, O'Malley. We need to cut off the sauce. I told you we shouldn't be drinking on the... oh, my God. Hey, Mickey changed his picture.
Oh, you only just caught that?
Yeah, I just glanced over. It's on my other screen.
Ah.
People with your multiple monitors.
Yeah, I keep my second screen turned off because it has speakers on it.
Ah.
Background noise, you know?
Yeah. Wait, I thought that's what this was, this episode was. Oh, I'm sorry. So Gary Seven crawls on a piece of piping behind with his most obvious just printed screen behind him. Uses a sonic screwdriver, pops open a panel and starts fiddling with stuff as his cat's crawling on his back.
Well, it's the safest place to be.
Yeah. Now, I like this part. This part's actually interesting. So they capture Kirk and Spock, and who are both smart enough not to say a damn word. They don't say a damn word. And they have their transport, communicators and their phasers.
Is it that they're not smart enough, or they're not really allowed to participate in this episode? Because Kirk really wouldn't have given a shit.
Yeah, because you see Kirk keeps cutting glances off camera, and you know Roddenberry's there with like a ruler smacking his hand looking at him.
No, you will not stun everyone here at NASA. We're trying to set up a pilot.
Also, I couldn't help but notice that Spock found a hat. Just found a hat.
Didn't he beam down with the hat?
It looks like he stole Gilligan's hat.
Well, that was the first time. They went back to the ship in between.
Oh, did they? Oh, so they must have replicated. Well, they didn't have replicators. What did they? How did he get this hat? How did he find Gilligan's hat?
They probably bought it at a store.
No, they didn't buy it at a store. They beamed it out of a store.
Yeah.
They stole it.
Uh-huh.
Which caused somebody to get fired under suspicion of theft, which changed history forever, because that person was like some guy who cured cancer.
Ah, but see, since that person lost their horrible retail job, they were able to go and pursue their real dream of medicine, and that's how they discovered the cure to cancer.
Ah, damn you, temporal mechanics. Beat me again. And Scotty uses his evil-o-vision to zoom in on the, again, on the gantry there and look at Gary Seven fingering that big cylindrical rocket. Ugh.
Did we ever mention that the whole reason for all this nonsense is that something about an orbital weapons program or something?
Oh, no, it's funnier than that. It's a suborbital weapons program, which means they're just going to launch it up there, and about 20 minutes later, it's going to fall back down.
Right.
Isn't that what missiles do anyway?
You'd think.
By the context of the dialogue, it sounds like it's something that's supposed to, you know, stay up there. But again, they call it suborbital.
Why don't they just, like, put their missiles in, like, some kind of walking battle tank with a railgun? Then they could launch them from anywhere.
That's a fair point. I don't think they figured that out until 1973, though, when we got them.
This is the 60s, so it would have been the Shagopod in Russia, not Metal Gear.
The Shagopod. Oh, gosh. All right, yeah. So apparently, Gary Seven wanted to stop the rocket because the rocket was going to go up and then, what, accidentally explode and nuke somebody? And then that was going to start World War III or something?
I think the whole plot was to sabotage it so it explodes. Just, you know, just within the limit of safety and scare everybody off from doing that anymore.
Right. Because that wouldn't cause a knee-jerk reaction when everyone else launching their nukes. Oh, boy, this episode. All right, so he goes to a screen to look at more stock footage.
Well, yeah, because Scotty tries to beam him off the gantry and then Secretary Girl starts twiddling his knobs and gets him back. Well, you know, a secretary in the 60s.
Oh, yeah, that's kind of her job.
At least she's good at something.
It sure isn't styling her own hair.
Or dressing fashion. Herself.
Or dressing herself. Or speaking.
Or typing.
Yeah, or walking down the street without running into people.
Filtering out the people that enter the office.
Yeah. Calling cops.
No, she's pretty good at that. She called them and they came, so.
Yeah, that's true. So she's good at calling cops.
The other thing she's not good at is quitting her job, because she quits like 3 times this episode and is still working there at the
end. Yeah, but she's a woman, though. You can't trust anything they say. They're just being silly. This is the 60s. You know, Lewis, I want a divorce. Oh, don't be silly. Get back in the kitchen. Okay. I mean, that's just, you know.
This is terrible.
Look, I didn't write this episode. I didn't make the 60s happen, okay?
For a man to help solve a problem. So maybe that's not a good thing to be proud of.
That's a point, too.
I mean, if she were Xena, she would just kick their asses.
Well, yeah. If she were Janeway, she'd just come with some convoluted plot that would, like, come together at the very last second, and then we'd all see how smart she is.
If she was Janeway, she would have let them in, because she couldn't get involved. Unproductive. Can't stop them.
All right.
Well, that's only if, you know, it would actually help her to stop them from coming in.
Is this episode ever going to end? So the rocket launches. Everyone's very upset. We don't know if Gary Seven's modifications did what it was supposed to, but we're thinking it didn't. It's But there's a chance that what he did worked and everything will happen, but there's a chance that it won't. So now are we willing to take the risk of the rocket actually impacting or blowing up in the atmosphere? The drama for the next 45 minutes has me biting my nails.
Right, so basically it's like, you know, Kirk goes to Spock and is like, can you do this? No. Yeah. Thanks, Spock.
Yeah. Thanks.
Well, let's just go back to watching him. That'll be fun.
Whoa. So then Gary Seven uses his sonic screwdriver and blows up. Doesn't like disintegrate. Blows the fuck up the telephone line. And then she
sold somehow still boring.
Yeah, I mean.
And there's also a thing at some point where Secretary pulls the sonic screwdriver out and almost kills everybody.
Right. Because teehee, just a woman.
Ah, so that's another thing she's not good at, threatening people with a gun.
Oh, man. I just don't know, like, what they're trying to do. I mean, it's not a very interesting plot. It's not done very well.
Maybe that was the point.
I imagine if this wasn't sharing time being Star Trek and another TV show all at once, one of the two would have come out okay.
I don't know, because I don't think either plot is all that interesting. Because, okay, now imagine if they didn't pick up Gary Seven. Imagine that they just came here to observe and see what happened. Imagine how much fun that would be. Just Spock staring into his blue scanner thing. Kirk just being sweaty and mugging at the camera, sitting in his captain's chair.
Well, no, if there wasn't Gary Seven...
Maybe the point of this episode was to make the Gary Seven show look terrible. Like, hey, CBS, this is what you could have instead of Star Trek. So which show would you prefer?
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't even know. Yeah, at this point, I just kind of zoned out. I tried to pay attention, but I couldn't.
So, at some point, his cat turns into a slut?
Yeah, which was kind of interesting, I had to say. And then the secretary, for some reason, you know, being a woman, couldn't stand the fact there was an attractive female in the room, and they started, like, eye-hating each other.
And then turns back into a cat, and...
Yeah, it just turns into the, is it a cat or isn't it? I guess you'll have to watch and see.
And that, we can't reveal too much, but we can say you have plenty of exciting adventures that will
starting next fall.
Don't get picked up.
Yeah. If you watch our show, you might see a hot cat chick. I mean, you know, Batman was on a few years ago, so you know, if you miss Julie Newmar, you'll get your fix here.
Hey. Eartha Kitt is Catwoman.
Sorry, Eartha Kitt. Either one. Both of them are fine. So the secretary decides to take it upon herself to bash in Gary Seven's head. So even though a Vulcan nerve pinch didn't work, a phaser barely worked, he took on 6 security guards by himself, a 20-year-old secretary with a plastic box bonking him on the heads enough to knock him onto the ground.
Well, he wasn't bred to resist that.
I guess.
You know, he evolved to be weak to that point.
Yeah, the back of his head is just soft. That's like the trade-off. He's like a newborn. It's just squishy back there like a boiled egg.
Well, after, you know, 20 or 30 generations of the babies not getting dropped on their heads, of course it's going to start to, you know, not be as tough back there.
What is this, Lamarckian evolution? What are you talking about?
That's some highbrow shit right there for this podcast.
You know, if the aliens that set all this up were smart, they would have been dropping those kids all over the place.
Right.
Like, so season 2 of Star Trek ends with Assignment Earth, and then they get renewed for season 3, and season 3 opens up with Spock's brain.
Wait, that was the first episode of season 3?
Yep.
Well, the mystery of why Star Trek got canceled after 4 seasons is quickly becoming coming clear.
Yeah, it never made it to a 4th season.
There's only 3 seasons? I thought it had 4.
No, it was 3.
No.
3 seasons? Okay. God. Yeah, no wonder. Yeah, that's what I understand. How could the show get worse over time? Did like Roddenberry run out of ideas? Run out of steam? What happened?
But Spock's brain money. Spock's brain is great.
No.
Oh, it's great, but not for the right reasons.
I didn't say it was for the right reasons. I just said it was great. The civilization is dying. They need a new computer to run it. Let's put Spock's brain in it.
Although the Voyager episode where the Doctor, you know, was like an opera singer or whatever, that was basically the same plot, wasn't it?
What?
Maybe.
Yeah, I think so. Remember that? Okay, so remember the Voyager episode where they went to this planet and the Doctor could sing, and they're like, "Oh, he's a great singer." And then they like, you know, wanted him to record and be an opera singer and do all this kind of stuff. So they were going to steal him away because he like could do something they couldn't do, and they were going to take him away. And it reminded me of Spock's brain.
Uh huh.
Maybe we'll have to watch the episode. I'll show you the parallels if we ever watch that episode.
You do that. Well, it's not Voyager next week. It's Star Trek the Animated Series. So who has a suggestion?
All right. I'm suggesting we do... we're doing two episodes, correct?
Yeah.
I want to do The Practical Joker, where the Enterprise pranks the crew to death.
Sounds good.
And the other one, I don't know the episode title yet, but it's one with Tribbles.
More Tribbles?
That'd be it, yes.
More Tribbles, I think.
Whatever. It's all the same thing. Look, the order of words in a sentence doesn't make a difference.
Yeah. More Tribbles, more troubles, more money, more problems.
Yeah. Bitches may be mentioned in there somewhere. I don't know. I can't keep track. Oh, gosh. So Kirk and Spock finally make it to Gary Seven's office. Spock tries to use the computer to do what needs to be done. There's a chance they could do it, and maybe not.
Wait, didn't we already go over this?
Yeah, we finished this. Yeah, the episode's done. We don't have to talk about it anymore.
Oh, God. I just wanted to be over, too. I just wanted to be over.
It is.
It is?
I got 3.5 minutes left.
The thing is, like, you know, Majel Barrett was getting all kinds of Roddenberry unproduced stuff produced starting in the late 90s. Why was this the one thing she didn't try to touch again?
She probably saw it and realized that it sucked.
Oh, the Gary Seven concept?
Yeah.
It's a pretty cheesy concept.
It could be made to work, though. It would just take the right people behind it.
Okay. All right. Well, you want to do this? You want to do this, XV? Do you really want to see if we can get Gary Seven to work for, like, a modern audience?
I mean, I don't think it would work with Robert Lansing anymore, considering, you know, he died.
Actually, that would make it a lot more interesting if we raised him from the dead.
By what methodology? Like, a Lazarus pit? Or like
a shambling skeleton.
Oh, God. All right.
In a fresh suit every scene.
Well, he would need it.
Yeah. All right. So, yeah, Gary Seven. Okay, so aliens came down, what, 15,000 years ago or something? Is that what he said?
6,000?
Was it 6,000? Yeah, maybe it was just 6,000. So after agricultural revolution, that's fine. Still modern human, but just primitive technological. Steals them away, breed them, raise them, perfect them genetically, then send them back to Earth to help with things?
Yeah.
Okay. So how's that different?
What was there to help with? Things were great.
Yeah. So how's that different than like Superman, the alien coming from somewhere else, coming down to Earth to help everybody?
Well, there's no powers.
Oh, he's got powers. I mean, he's like tough. He's strong. He's kind of like Captain America. He's kind of physically perfect.
There's no overt powers, though. That's kind of the thing.
Well, he doesn't have flying or laser eyes.
Well, he has a sonic screwdriver, so he's got Doctor Who's powers, basically. He does. He's got a TARDIS
powers,
and a sonic screwdriver.
And he has a companion.
Yes.
Of dubious usefulness.
Yep. Who's an attractive girl to bring in that subset of viewers.
Okay, so
men who aren't getting laid.
Need okay. I remind you what we're doing right now?
Okay, so what year did Doctor Who start originally? Oh.
It was early 60s. I think it was like 63, I want to say.
Like, I'm starting to wonder
Formats,
now if...
You should know this.
Yeah, right? 60s.
I'm starting to wonder now if this was actually just Roddenberry trying to rip off Doctor Who.
It's very close. But I can say, though, that Gary Simpson is a lot more...
Yeah, 63.
Yeah, nailed it. Yeah. Nerd power activate. So, yeah. So if he's trying to rip off Doctor Who, I think he missed some critical components, which is the whimsy and the fun and the exploration.
The charisma.
And the charisma, yes. Because Gary Seven is a stone-faced... He's like the eagle from the Muppets.
Well, Gary Seven...
It's Doctor Who filtered through Dragnet.
Right. Gary yes. Seven is played like a 60s TV cop.
Yeah. Which is boring.
Ah, but that played to audiences at the time, probably.
Yes. It'd be like yeah. nowadays if they filtered Doctor Who through like NCIS or some shit. God, that sounds awful.
That does sound awful. I was just about to say that.
I feel dirty.
It just literally made me throw up my mouth a little bit. God, that does sound terrible. So we know...
CSI TARDIS.
No, it'd be more like Doctor Who filtered through Law and Order, I think.
So CSI TARDIS would just be...
The TARDIS arrives with Dong Dong.
Dong Dong.
And suddenly Fort Max sells all of us on the concept with just two syllables.
Yes. So technically, if it's CSI TARDIS, it'd be CSI TARDIS, because then in itself is an acronym.
Yep.
All right. So we know what didn't work in the past with Star Trek. We knew what was good about Star Trek with TNG and DS9. We saw it slowly decay and fail into Voyager and Enterprise. So it's been about a decade. It's been 10 years since we had a Star Trek series. And weren't we just talking about what would it be like if they rebooted Star Trek and what the new TV show would be like? And lo and frickin' behold, they announced today that there is going to be a new Star Trek TV series come January 2017.
Right, and for more conversation about that, listen to Superhero Time, the after show, right after this.
Woo!
Needly, needly, needly.
And now, a special tribute to Ken, who is no longer with this show.
Hey, I hear talking.
I thought you were back, so I had this great idea. Now that Ken has opted out of doing this podcast, we should
now
stop talking about
you.
Voyager and Enterprise. I mean, that wasn't his only complaint, but it would piss him off pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When he comes mm-hmm. back, do only Voyager and Enterprise.
We'll make up for his lost time, yes.
I could afford ramen black.
Ramen Ooh. Black?
Is that,
the fancy $3 ramens.
Oh, okay.
They come with like three or four spice packets in them. Instead
well,
of just the one.
La-dee-da.
Well, why do you need three or four spice packets?
Well, one has got your spice, one has your mushrooms and dehydrated
oh, okay.
vegetables, and one
okay.
has your oil.
Ooh, ooh oil.
Can't you drink it?
It's going to be a fun little journey through the digestive tract.
No, that's one of our long-running jokes that Ken needs to drink oil.
Like just a whole glass full of it. You could be able to hold him to.
I wasn't even thinking of stopping at a glass. I was thinking we would just like get him one of those, you know, bottles of canola oil, and he would just drink the bottle of canola oil.
So gross.
All 32 ounces of it.
Turns the colon into a slip and slide.
Of course, you know, we'd have to duct tape over his mouth afterward to make sure it stays in.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And to prevent squeaks.
Well, no, the oil prevents the squeaks.
Yeah, I think he's going to be lubricated enough. He's not going to be squeaking or rattling after that. It's like human WD-40.
We just aim Ken at the squeaky hinge and like press on his head or something.
Oh, come squirt at his ass.
Don't you wish Ken was here right now?
I kind of do, yeah. I kind of. I miss him already.
It's not much fun to make fun of him if he's not around.
Yeah,
he needs to suffer in our presence.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he doesn't get that indignant, hey, like he normally does.
Wow, you did that almost perfectly. That was uncanny.
That's because I'm a terrible person.